Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Miss Brooklyn Longaria, and the lovely Pamela Williamson. You've built a more than impressive career leading sales and brand strategy at companies like Fiji Water, Molson Coors, and now you currently serve as the regional VP at Salesforce. But beyond the boardroom, my sources have told me that you're a dedicated leader and just an overall impactful person in your community. So today we're going to talk all things marketing, leadership, and what it really takes to make the change and the impact that you have in the industry.
So. I love it. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're lovely. Yeah, we're of course. We're so excited to have you on.
So we just saw your LinkedIn post about your upcoming event, eTail, that you're going to. The event dives into the latest trends in retail. So personally, I'm really curious about this because I work in retail. What would you say some of the leading trends are or something you always spot in a retail company?
Yeah, you know, eTail West, it was actually a couple of weeks ago, but it was in Palm Desert. And I always call it our marquee event for my team. It is the best place to prospect, to get to know your clients. It's in a very casual atmosphere. It's at the Desert Springs Marriott. Have you ever been out there?
Okay.
It's awesome. And this year it was close to 90 degrees. So we all enjoyed some sunshine. It was really nice and connected with a lot of customers there. And yeah, retail trends were top of mind. That was a big part of the conference, of course. And we have industry experts within our company as well. And a couple of things really stood out this year. Of course, AI, it's a non-negotiable.
Of course.
If you are not already investing in AI, you are behind.
Yeah.
So that's what we've seen as a major trend. And then personalization is key. So I work within our digital world at Salesforce, and historically in my career, I've primarily been aligned to marketers, so working within MarTech as well as our commerce solutions, and there we see that personalization is paramount to engaging with customers. So, for example, if you're on a website and you're checking out all of their different products, you step away from your computer, you go to walk your dog or whatnot, you come back and the same hero shot is on the site, but you had been looking at patio furniture or something else, that is where there's a miss with that particular retailer.
Yeah.
They should be thinking more about personalization for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say, like, an example of personalization in, like, a leading company right now is, like, a brand that a lot of people would know.
Oh, especially, hopefully, students are into the Reformation. Have you heard about the Reformation?
Yes, yes.
Really amazing apparel. They're a marquee customer of ours. They leverage our commerce solution and some of the cool things they do right now. When you go in store, they have virtual dressing rooms. So you go into the store, there's a huge TV, and you're able to, it's a touch screen, you're able to pick out clothes on the TV, and then essentially their associate builds the dressing room for you.
Oh my gosh.
Put all their clothes in the dressing room for you, you go and try things on, and you're able to just, like, change it up in real time. It's very cool.
I have not heard about that. That is so fun.
Yeah.
I would probably buy it all.
Yeah.
I know myself.
I saw a post on your Twitter that said something about data plus AI plus CRM makes customer magic, and I just thought to myself, I was like, it's customer magic, but it's also a new personal assistant almost.
Yeah.
It's just being applied to your online shopping experience.
Exactly.
Oh, for sure. Your grocery experience. It's like everything.
I also feel like in the new world, like, there's not a lot of things happening and changing in, like, retail.
Right.
At least where I worked. I was at American Eagle for 5 years, 4 years.
Yep.
And it was a very consistent, this is what you do, this is what you do. Like, I remember training, like, I had to do it once and I was good for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I find interesting with companies that are so successful is not changing what they're doing to see if there is a more valuable market out there.
Yeah. Being on the cutting edge is super important in retail or else you're going to fall behind.
Yeah.
Other companies are going to lap you. And I think, you know, when you're talking about, like, working in retail on the retail floor, that's what we kind of call clienteling. And so if you're using an iPad or other sort of technology in store to better understand who your customer is, because you're going to have frequent customers.
Yeah.
So if you know who they are, you can then get their dressing room set up for them or whatever well in advance of them even showing up. If you know they're coming in that week, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. We tried to start doing, like, appointments and stuff, and it was working out, honestly. And I think that's probably one of, like, the coolest things about retail these, like, in this new day, because my mom would never probably be like, yeah, let me put a virtual outfit on
right.
and go to the mall
3D.
And try it on.
Like, yeah.
I just think it's really cool for our generation that's going to be there when yeah. it's like a big thing.
Yeah, it is. My new favorite thing is walking into a fitting room and seeing a big iPad.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, how can I change the lights? How can I apply the sizes? Who can I call for
yeah.
help? And it's just like, it's a completely personal experience, but I feel so involved with it now,
yep.
you know? So that's really, I mean, how are you staying motivated to, I guess, continue to adapt in such an ever-changing market right now?
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to staying motivated, like I've been in business now for 25 mm-hmm. years. I'm dating myself. This year's a big birthday. I'm like, oh boy, yeah. it's going to be a lot of fun. But when it comes to motivating myself in like the constant innovation and change, I think it's just maintaining that level of curiosity. Mm-hmm. Like, I consider myself an eternally curious person. Mm-hmm. I love something like this. I've never done a podcast, yeah. but I love being in your seat where I'm the interviewer. My husband's always like, oh, my gosh, so many questions. And my dad is the same way, like, maybe because he came from a small town. But I ask so many questions mm-hmm. of people. I'm always curious. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big part of how you can continue to remain relevant mm-hmm. to then capture more information and adjust. And I think leaning into change, you know, where I work, especially there's constant innovation mm-hmm. with our solutions, and it can be like stomach churning. You can get really overwhelmed. You can get nervous. You're like, oh gosh, now this tool is evolving into this. How do I position this with a customer? But instead, I take it as, like, this is opportunity.
Yeah.
Lean in and mm-hmm. evolve. And if you don't know the answer, ask for help.
Yeah, I feel like talking to people is, like, one of the most important things that I've realized in the past year. I know we've had a coffee chat before.
Yeah.
I just, like, love hearing how to make myself more successful. Like, the pointers and, like, the uh-huh. maybe try this. 'Cause I feel like the guidance from people that you could see yourself in their shoes in the future is one of the most important things as students that we can do right now, because we don't have the time to do a full-time job.
Right. You don't have the
yeah.
experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And experience is a currency, right? Mm-hmm. So the more experience you can get, whether it's a job here in the digital library or yeah. the Digital Humanities Center, yeah. whatever you call this cool podcasting place. But I think just any sort of experience you can garner, whether it's paid or unpaid, is huge.
Yeah.
And also how you share that in your resume and beyond, like how you speak to it, whether you're using ChatGPT to refine your verbiage, but also speaking to like, what did I do to benefit, like to make an impact and
yeah.
benefit wherever I was working, whether you increase their sales by yeah. a certain amount or whatever.
Yeah, I've realized like this past year as well that adding numbers to your resume makes you look even better.
All the more of a difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you said in what we were previously talking about, you've been in business for 25 years,
yes.
correct?
Yes.
In those 25 years, what would you say was your biggest, like, win? Like,
yeah.
your biggest, like, oh, I did it. I'm going to be successful.
Yeah.
Like, that moment where you just, like, took the breath, you know?
That was such a good question. So I went through some of these questions the other mm-hmm. day, and I was drafting up a few responses.
Mm-hmm.
And that one struck me because I'm like, gosh, I don't really know. Because
mm-hmm.
I've honestly been in sales since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I graduated college, I went straight into insurance sales, God forbid. I mean, that was not a dreamy job. But I cried the first few days driving home from it because I thought this is miserable. But then I got like rookie of the year that mm-hmm. year. It was super fun. And I made a lot of friends at that job. So I think, you know, where I felt like I was sort of hitting my stride was with Miller Brewing Company. So again, mm-hmm. dating myself. This was when I worked for Mark Lindner. He was my leader within our national account and import and craft division. But just right before working for him, I called on Stater Brothers. I'm sure you've heard of Stater Brothers
yes.
out here. And when you call on grocery chains in the beer industry, you're looking to gain greater shelf space or, you know, secure displays, secure what we'd call like a weekly ad. So
mm-hmm.
you're part of like the circular. You're in the image with your case of beer, and you're
yeah.
trying to make sure that you're on sale, that you're the best deal, because that drives incremental volume, right? And so I was able to secure a really great ad the week of the California Speedway, like the big event at Cal Speedway. And we also were able to secure a customer sort of sweepstakes where one customer from mm-hmm. Stater Brothers would win a ride around the track with Kurt Busch in
oh.
the car. This was when he was driving the NASCAR.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was never a big NASCAR fan. Mm-hmm. I didn't even understand the culture. I was like, what is this? Sure enough, it was so rad. And I was able to also go in the car. And I didn't realize, so like, sick. You climbing through the window. I thought there was, where's the air conditioning? And I was like, what is happening? It was so fun. And we got to loop around the track. And it was really inspiring because I felt like, okay, I had secured an amazing ad. Volume spiked that week for Stater Brothers and for our beer brands. I also worked really closely with the beer buyer, who was our main point of contact to, you know, generate mm-hmm. that success. Mm-hmm. And then he also saw it as a benefit to their business because we took one of their best customers around the track. Like, it was a unique experience.
Yeah.
And it also resonated with the buyer because he loved NASCAR. So half of the battle in any sort of role in business, whether it's sales, marketing, whatever you pursue, you have to know what makes people tick. Like, mm-hmm. what is it that they enjoy doing? Whether you're in their office and you look behind them and they're a big, I don't know, some sort of sports fan, or they love to scuba dive or something. If you can find some sort of common ground or help them, like, do something they really enjoy outside of the day-to-day, mm-hmm. that's a win.
Yeah.
So that, I feel like that might have been one of the points in my career where I'm like, that was super memorable. And it also felt like, okay, I can totally do this.
I can do it.
It felt really good.
I feel like as college students right now, like Estrella and I, we struggle with what am I going to do once I'm graduated? Am I going to be successful? Obviously, everyone's thinking that.
Yeah.
But what do you think your advice to like a 20-year-old college student would be with that mindset?
Yeah, I think in this day and age, it's so different.
Mm.
Like, where I grew up, such a conservative household in Minnesota, middle of nowhere, and I felt like you stay at a job for 10 to 15 years. And I did. When I, my first job, I didn't. But once I graduated from graduate school, I got my MBA. Then I was like, okay, I'm gonna set it and not forget it, but I'm going to stay the course at Miller Coors for a good 6-7 years. It was a good blip in my career. And that was good. But I also feel like now you have the opportunity to make choices and change so much more rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So you could try something for a year or two and it won't look like a mark on your resume. It won't look bad if you change and you completely pivot. And when you're young, you can completely change quickly as opposed to at my age. I really like, yes, I could all of a sudden be selling medical supplies or something else, but I would be starting over in a lot of ways because I don't have the industry acumen. But you can go into retail right now. You could go into accounting. You could change so many things really dynamically. And then in 5 to 10 years, you're like, okay, this is what I've got. Because I think when you're young, it's more of checking off what you don't want to do as opposed to knowing what you are going to do.
Yeah.
I had a mentor of mine tell me something like that maybe 10 years ago. He used to be Courtney Cox's acting coach. And he was like, well, Estrella, I'll tell you, the shorter list is going to be the no's or the yeses. I believe so. The shorter list is going to be the yeses. And it's so interesting because I just want to revisit for a second because I feel like we glossed over your NASCAR, your big win.
Yeah,
and
that was crazy.
I just feel like, especially at the point that I am, and maybe Brooklyn, you're starting to see this too with having more jobs and stuff, you start to see the common things that you like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so our next question was going to be about that transition from the beverage industry to Salesforce, but it's like you telling that story alone, I saw the unique ability to give somebody a personalized experience just by understanding and knowing that. So help walk us into that. I mean, you kind of started to teeter into it, but sales and leadership, that's a common skill. It seems like a Pamela skill.
Yeah. I don't know if it is. Well, I mean, I really wasn't a leader until I was at Catalina Marketing and maybe had a small taste of it at Miller when I had someone on my team when I was in pricing. So didn't really get into leadership until late in my career. Mm-hmm. I had always had this goal of I always want to be a sales leader. I just would love to have a team. I know that I could drive impact with the team, but also like what I've noticed in now being a leader, the best thing about being a leader is seeing other people thrive and perform and helping them get promoted, helping garner like great merit increases, stock. I mean, I love to help people make more money. because at the end of the day, that's the majority of the reason of why we're all working.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like it really is to pay the bills, to provide for a family, whatever your goal and your why is. Mm-hmm. Everyone's purpose is different.
Mm-hmm.
So like your why when you're young is going to be really different than maybe your why in 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But transitioning from the beverage industry into tech, it was, I mean, a lengthy transition. So, you know, I started out in insurance, yada, yada, ended up in getting my MBA. And then I feel like my true career really started then mm-hmm. when I worked for Miller Brewing Company, Feed You Water, Justin Wine.
How old were you then?
So I worked for 2 years after undergrad and then went back to grad school. And mm-hmm. I went okay. full time because I felt like yeah. I don't want to just kind of half-ass it. Like yeah, I just didn't want to do the night program. And a lot of people do and do it really successfully, but I wasn't married at the time. I felt like I'm still young. So I was 24 getting my MBA, 26 when I finished it. And then, yeah, I was 26 when I started at Miller and I was there, yeah, 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved into Feed You Water, Justin Wine after that. And then ultimately Catalina Marketing, because I felt like okay, the beverage industry was great, but I was starting to hit not a ceiling, but I felt like, okay, I'd done national account sales. What else do I really yeah. want to do here? And I felt like there's something more. And I kind of thought about medical sales. I knew I wanted to stay in sales. I yeah. love yeah. sales. But I thought, okay, maybe try out digital media because I had been calling on marketers. Mm-hmm. And so they had brand budgets that we were using when we were talking with them, you know, as it relates to all CPG, all consumer packaged goods, right? Mm-hmm. So working for Catalina was a natural transition because it was still in the CPG industry and we were using insights from mm-hmm. all of the grocers that we worked with. So we would capture shopping insights because we had relationships with the retailers. Mm-hmm. We would use those insights to then leverage media dollars to then help them mm-hmm. Provision coupons by way of us that would print out at the store. So it's like kind of a long, convoluted journey, but very yeah. personalized based on historical transactions, mm-hmm. based on knowledge that we have of the consumer.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. Ahead of its time.
It was pretty cool. I will say, like, the printout coupons, though, felt a bit archaic
yeah.
toward the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were also held by a private equity firm. So I had worked for Miller Brewing Company, you know, huge publicly traded company, continued to change hands and evolve and merge. But I loved that. Publicly traded was cool. But then I wanted to work for a smaller company, a non-elk. So I went to work for Feed You Water, family run by Roll Global. They're based mm-hmm. out of L.A. They own Teleflora. They also own the wonderful company like Pistachios, okay. et cetera. It's privately held by a couple that it's a billionaire couple. And then wanted to go back to a larger company, but Catalina was not that big,
mm-hmm.
but it was held by a private equity firm. And if you know anything about private equity firms, they typically run the company for a few years, try to generate as much revenue as possible, and then they trim the fat.
Yeah.
And it mm-hmm. can be constant changeover of C-suite, of executives, major changes in comp plans. So being a salesperson and money hungry, I was like, this is not
yeah.
what I want to do
yeah.
long term. It felt very shaky.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had a lot of colleagues migrating over to tech. So this was in 2018 when one of my colleagues had went over to Salesforce and he referred me in. And based on my consumer goods background, I was able to then, you know, get into mm-hmm. Salesforce. But it has been a pretty dynamic shift. But I would say, like, for the most part, you know, it was mainly the pace is different. I feel like tech sales, the innovation is so constant
yeah.
that I will never be ahead of whatever we're positioning. Like, everything is still on the roadmap.
Yeah.
Nothing's generally available. It can be stressful in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the pace is just really different than what I was used to before.
Yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. Do you think that the pace of, like, tech sales is more difficult than the pace you were at before, or just a different type of, like, pace and, like, energy that
yeah.
you have to put in?
I think it's more difficult.
Uh-huh.
I think it's also because I'm a sales leader.
Mm-hmm.
So I have people relying on me. And, like, you don't realize till you're a leader of people that – you truly can help them in their career. Yeah. You can make a big impact on their life, mm-hmm. good or bad. Mm-hmm. And I take it really seriously because I'm like, this person has decided to work in this organization and they have decided to work for me. And I work with them every day. Mm-hmm. I help influence their paycheck, their deals, everything. So the pace is faster and more difficult because there's more people relying on me and like my calendar fills up and I have to make choices of who do I spend time with. Mm-hmm. And it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, do I spend, as a leader, how do you do that?
Yeah. I mean, I spend time with everyone. Like my team, that I know they're going to listen to this. And I was talking with them. I'm like, okay. Like, hey, and my team is all female, actually, not by design,
okay,
but just
happy International Women's
Month.
Your post was beautiful.
And I tagged them all. They're all fabulous. But, you know, I spend time with each of them. And, you know, sure, we have someone who she almost hit 300% of her number last year. Just phenomenal performance. I still spend time with her because I know that I can make an impact there differently than maybe a new hire who's 2 months in, who may need more support on some of those introductory calls to customers. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, she's great, super professional, but at the same time might not have all the product knowledge or knows like those like pretty exact next steps.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of how I try to navigate it best.
That's good.
Yeah. When you were coming into your leadership, I know especially in the business world, it can be very competitive and it can feel very hard to prioritize others while simultaneously like prioritizing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get over that hump and kind of transform yourself into, I recently learned about a concept called severance leadership, which is serving other people before you serve yourself. How were you able to make that shift?
Yeah.
Or did you always have it?
I don't know as if I do this. I try to. I think being a mother helps. Mm. Like, I'm a mom of twin boys that are 13, going on 13.
Oh, wow.
And I think I'm definitely a servant leader in my household. I put my children first. My husband would agree with that all the time. And I think that helps. But when it comes to sales leadership, it's more of just remembering that, again, it is this individual's choice to be here working in this team. And I look at it as a team environment. I don't look at it like I'm a boss or anything like that. Like, honestly, I work for them and I want them to be the best that they can be as human beings and grow and develop. And if sales is their long-term growth plan, amazing. I'm here to help. If they want to go into something different, great. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a woman on my team who just transitioned over to a different team because she wanted an expanded skill set. I was all for it. Like, so
like
great
a coach,
to see.
Kind of.
That's a lost mindset in leadership, especially in management. I know we both had our fair share of stories and things, especially in the retail sector.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's such a great, I don't know, to hear that your team has that, I feel like they're super
day-to-day, like,
grateful for that.
Healthy management is really hard to come by, especially, I have a few connects at companies that I won't say, but they have talked to me about it, because my main question is, what is your most difficult thing you have to deal with day-to-day? Like, what's the hardest part? Because I want to be as prepared as I can for the hard days, because the good days are going to be so good, but I know the bad days are going to be so bad. And I had a couple of them tell me that they struggled with management because it wasn't as inclusive for a woman or it wasn't as, like, they didn't like to hear women out in the way of, like, allowing them to build. So it's really great to hear that you're able to comfort your team and, like, make them feel like they can grow and build based on your advice.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of people you hear that just don't like getting up in the morning and going to their job, I feel like it's something I never want to wish upon myself sort of thing. But it's also like, you know, that starts from, it's an organizational structure thing and it just trickles down as well. So
I mean, it can be. Mm-hmm. Or even if the dynamic up the chain is a bit intense, you can still make it fun.
Yeah.
Like, the other day, we had a really big extended team call. There were probably 20 people on this call. Mm. And I was asking for everyone to be dynamic, engaging. We were talking about accounts that we're targeting for the year. We call them our big bets. And I'm like, all right, y'all, we're going to have some fun today. Yeah. I'm wearing, you know, Viore's one of our target customers. And I'm like, I'm wearing my Viore joggers right now. No one could tell. But, you know, like, just having a really good time.
Yeah.
And making people laugh, yeah. I think, is the best medicine in any job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you can have fun with the people you work with, then yeah. you're going to want to go to work.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think sales is, like, one of the most fun things you can do, and that's just my opinion, but yeah. I love trying to sell something to someone. I mean, mm-hmm. all the retail experience that I've been involved, like, I've done myself, it's fun.
Yeah.
Like, I find it engaging to, like, try to, like, pick apart a customer and, like, target them, like, perfectly. It's like yeah. a game, kind of. And if you make it like that and you make it fun and, like, exciting.
They,
like,
feed off your energy.
Exactly.
They do. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yep.
Do you – I'm going to jump to another question
sure.
after that. Do you think that formal education or real-world experience played a bigger role in your success?
I would say both.
Okay.
And I know that's not the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I'm a huge proponent of higher education. That's mm-hmm. why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And I pursued my MBA. I'm such a proponent for more and more education. Mm-hmm. You know, even at home, like, we talk about it all the time. Because I think that education prepares you for what the real world will potentially mm-hmm. throw your way. And it's more of navigating diverse personalities and being able to work with people of all types of backgrounds, different, like, viewpoints, and how they want to work. And I think that that, in particular, like, in business school and in your MBA program, like, that's where you're going to capture some of that interaction, and mm-hmm. then you take it to the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Real world experience, sure, that's where some of that experience as a currency mantra comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say education's a big part of it.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. agree.
What's a professional mistake that you made that at the time felt like a disaster, but made you a better leader in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if this parlays much to leadership.
Or you can get general.
Yeah, I think.
Take us back to the intern days.
Yeah.
Literally.
No, one of the mistakes I think I made, although it turned out to be a silver lining, it was probably a great decision. Because, I mean, your life is truly just like a sequence of your decisions,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And this was, gosh, what year was this? I don't even remember. But it was about couple of years after I had met my husband, my now husband, and I was still working for Miller Brewing Company, and a prior leader had called me, and he's the one who had recruited me. Like, he had been an advocate and one of my mentors. So I look at mentorship and advocacy a little different. An advocate is someone who, you know, they're in the boardroom or in some meeting talking about talent, and they're saying great things about you on your behalf. Mm-hmm. A mentor is someone who might still do that, but who really spends time with you one-on-one, yeah. right, to develop you and coach you. So he was definitely a big advocate, and he had promoted me numerous times. And he had since moved to Cincinnati, was leading our big national account team, and he needed someone to call in Kroger, one of the biggest national account roles in the country. And he called me. I was at the airport traveling between account visits, and he's like, hey, you know, I'd love to have you up here in Cincinnati. What do you think? This would be a promotion, all the great things.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I'm with my serious boyfriend. I think things are moving in the right direction. Like, I really want to stay in Southern California. You know, I'm sorry, this just isn't the right fit for mm-hmm. me. And he had offered me a promotion prior, and I had said no. And he's like, well, you know, this is two strikes, kind of thing.
Oh,
and
no.
And I said, gosh, you know, I hope this doesn't damage the relationship. And he's like, no, but I just want to give you some advice. Is like, you know, you don't want to say no too often to opportunities when someone mm-hmm. is. He didn't coin himself as an advocate for me, but that was something that he brought up. And in hindsight, I look back and I think, gosh, what would have happened had I taken that role? Mm-hmm. Probably would have left California. I don't know if my boyfriend at the time would have come with me. I might not have been married. You know, all mm-hmm. of these yeah. things snowball. But it's also the silver lining that I did make that decision mm-hmm. because then I got engaged later, happily married with children, and I have a great job in tech.
Yeah.
I might not have ended up where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know as if it's a mistake, but it was a big decision that felt like a mistake at the time.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
long did it take you in the aftermath of that to, like, mentally get over you doing that?
I'm a pretty quick turn off that switch type of gal.
Me
probably 24 hours. But yeah, well. No, but since then, I haven't really stayed in touch with him. And he did open doors for me. And I think that's important to maintain that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was my fault that the relationship kind of fell apart, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of like an old school thought that, oh, you can only say no twice before like kind of cutting ties.
I mean, he had already been counting, so.
Yeah.
You weren't counting.
A little weird.
Yeah, I feel like your network is always very important in like that age especially, but honestly, if it's not, and either you're not getting the appreciate, like you're not getting appreciated at the point you deserve.
Right.
I mean, it's like you said, it's a series of decisions, and you're in this room with us in the labs.
Yeah.
Now you're on a podcast.
Like, we're casting.
Okay. To end it off, we're going to ask you the question we ask everyone. What was one piece of advice that has stuck with you throughout your entire career journey?
I would say time is the most precious resource, not only for you, but for everyone else, and don't waste it.
Alrighty, everybody. We have had a dynamic, charming, talented. I'm just gonna keep on. She's wearing chunky necklaces, people.
Hey,
like, I think she's awesome.
Exactly.
Pamela Williamson, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Yeah.
I was so excited to have you on. I know Brooklyn was so excited to have you on. We heard how awesome you are. The source is Mark Lindner, by the way.
Told
me how awesome you are.
He's great. Thank you, Estrella. So thank you, Brooklyn. This was awesome.
We had
Thank you, ladies.
We'll see you guys next episode.
We will see you guys. Bye.
Bye.